Last week we stopped up to verse number 14, chapter 6, and we have seen so far Krishna is describing the process of sitting for meditation and how one should prepare oneself when the person or the meditator sits in meditation. And in the last verse, Krishna mentioned that that meditator, here called as a yogi, the meditator, who is able to bring his mind under control and fix his mind on me, what is going to be the result of such a type of meditation or state of meditation? So a meditator who is committed and dedicated to the practice of meditation commits his or her time daily and tries to bring the mind and focus the mind on God, what will be the result of such a meditation? This is what he is explaining now in verse number 15. Therefore, if we continue to practice this meditation for a length of time on a daily basis, Krishna says, Yogi Sada Atmanam Yunjan. As you can see, it's some of the words are in the first line and in the second line. Yogi meaning the meditator, Sada meaning always, Yunjan concentrates the mind, Atmanam here in the first line, Atmanam here stands for the mind. One who is able to fix the mind constantly upon the Lord by constant practice, evam, meaning in this manner of constantly sitting down in meditation and bringing your thoughts to the Lord. And what type of Lord should one fix the mind on? Here he says, one should fix the mind on me. So what type of Lord does the meditator fix the mind on? And in this manner, our scriptures have told us that it depends on the mind of the meditator. There are three different levels that we as a meditator can go through. The lowest level is known as the Manda, M-A-N-D-A, Manda. Manda level is the very first or early stage of meditation where we fix our mind on a personal God, a God with a particular form. So you can meditate on Rama, Devi, Krishna, whatever form of Lord. So that is called Eka Rupa Dhyanam, where you choose a particular form of Lord and you fix your mind on that form of Lord. Then we come to a more higher level of stage when a person is more advanced, that is known as the Madhyama stage. M-A-D-H-Y-A-M-A, Madhyama, meaning middle stage. And here, the very same Lord which we see in a form, now we are able to visualize the form in everything in creation. So you can meditate on the sun, on the moon, on the stars, on the rainbow. Whatever object in creation is able to remind you about that one very Lord. And that also we will be seeing in chapter 10 when Krishna will describe his manifestation in 70 over items in creation. So that is known as the Madhyama type of meditation, where the meditator is able to meditate on any object in creation that reminds him of Lord. And that is called Aneka Rupa Dhyanam. Earlier was Eka Rupa Dhyanam. The middle level is called Aneka Rupa, meaning varieties of manifestations. And then when a person is even more advanced at the higher stage, when he or she has gone through the teachings of the Upanishads, the scriptures, and understands that this highest form of Lord is actually unmanifest, all-pervading, then we come to the formless Ishvara state of meditation. And that level, one transcends all forms, and at this stage, it is said that the meditator the state of meditation and the goal of meditation all become merged into one. Whereas in the prior two stages, there is the meditator, there is the what we call the awareness that we are meditating, and there is a goal on what we are meditating. But at this higher stage, when we talk about the formless stage of meditation, all the three, the meditator, the process of meditation or the experience of meditation, and the goal of meditation all become merged into one. So there is no distinct identity. And we can read in the life of sages and saints, especially Ramakrishna Paramahansa, when he went into such a high state of meditation, he literally almost, what he saw was, in his state of meditation, everything in creation collapsed into one. So all the walls of the building, all the mountains, all the trees, everything collapsed, and he could only experience the oneness. He could not see any forms, shapes, size, colors, but just experience that oneness, that state of meditation, known as Arupa Dhyanam. Rupa means form, Arupa means formless, Arupa Dhyanam. So here Krishna says, if one is able to constantly fix their mind on God daily in that state of meditation, whether you choose a form or formless God, what happens? He says, look at the second line, verse 15, Niyata Manasa. When the mind is totally restrained, so when he says fix your mind on God, what he is saying is not temporarily, but the mind is totally restrained, fully under the control of the meditator. It is 100% totally fixed on a thought of God. So it is a total concentrated mind. What happens to this mind? He says, for such a meditator who has his mind totally under his control, and how it is attained? Through daily practice. We cannot expect to attain a fully controlled mind overnight. So we have to commit our time daily, and for as long as possible we can sit in meditation, we will be able to discipline that mind. What will be the result of such a dedicated, committed meditator? Krishna says, Shantim Adigachati. Adigachati means that meditator will attain Shantim, or state of mental peace. And this peace that the meditator attains is beyond the experience of the senses and the experience of the mind. That peace is not coming because of the senses, or it is not coming because your mind is in a state of happiness, but it is coming from within. That Satchit Ananda, if you are able to still the mind, if you are able to fix the mind, concentrate the mind on God, you will experience that bliss which is beyond what you experience with your senses. It is not coming because of your senses, the bliss. It is not coming because your mind is in happiness. It is coming from within. So this Shantim Adigachati means that bliss which is not dependent on any external factors, as it is coming from internal. And again, this bliss is so powerful that Krishna says it is Mat Samstam. Mat Samstam means once you are established, once you have tasted this bliss, even when you come out of meditation, you will be able to experience this bliss. It does not go away from you. You are not separated from this bliss. Once you manage to experience this bliss, even when you are out of the state of meditation, you will experience this inner bliss. So you will never lose this state of peace. And that is why a Jivan Mukta, one who has reached this level of meditation, where he or she is able to experience the bliss while in meditation and while out of meditation, will never even have desire for moksha. Why is that? He is already in bliss. He has already accepted that he is Satchit Ananda. So there is no more bondage, there is no more restriction. one is in a state of ultimate bliss. Even the desire for moksha also doesn't arise. So that is the highest state of bliss, because one has realized that I am ever free, I am eternal. What is the desire for moksha? When you realize that you are actually already eternal, you are ever free. So there is even no more desire for moksha also. And then that is only this bliss which we attain while we are living in the state of meditation or out of state of meditation. And if we carry on to experience this bliss when we are not even shaken by any external environment, then we reach the most higher state of bliss, which is described here as Nirvana Paramam. Nirvana Paramam means this bliss will culminate in moksha upon death, the highest state of bliss. There is no more Punarapi Jananam cycle already. There is no more birth cycle for such a person. So one has attained Nirvana Paramam. So now up to this verse 15, Krishna has more or less completed Anta Anga Sadhanam. Anta Anga Sadhanam means specific disciplines to be observed when sitting for meditation, which he has discussed over the last few verses. And now in verses 16 and 17, Krishna comes back to the topic of Bahir Anga Sadhanam, which means what are the disciplines to be observed in our daily living. So there are certain disciplines, because we should not just jump into meditation. If we have not observed disciplines in our daily life, then meditation is going to be very difficult. And what are these? He discusses in verses 16 and 17. And here Krishna speaks about moderation. Very important in our daily life for us to observe all forms of moderation. Here he selects three things which he advises us to lead a moderated life, which is, he deals with eating, the consumption of food, our activity, and our sleeping. So these three activities, eating, activity, and sleep, how we should moderate all these three things in our life. And what does he say? If you look at the first line, Ati hasnatas yogo na asti. Yogaha means meditation is not possible, na asti, it is not possible for one who asnata eats in ati, in excess. So one who consumes food in excess will not succeed in meditation. Now what is overeating? So the scriptures say overeating is, or what is considered appropriate food, that food which is eaten gets digested and nourishes the body, and we are able to do our work. So with the taking the right quantity and the right quality of food, anything beyond that is called overeating. So there is a short text which Adi Shankaracharya wrote. It's called Yati Panchakam, 5 verses for the liberated person. And he says, he talks about the monks, when they go around begging for food, they use a begging bowl, right? But the begging bowl can be different sizes. So a monk can use a big begging bowl, so receive a lot of food and eat. Similarly, a monk can use a smaller begging bowl and receive less food. But Shankaracharya says, what is the appropriate quantity of food that a human being should consume? How do you measure an appropriate quantity of food? What is the right way? Because if you go by your bowl, it can be small, it can be big. So what should be the appropriate size?
You feel lethargic and sleepy after having eaten.
Correct, but how do you judge the right size of food that you should consume?
Handful.
What your two hands can receive, that amount of food only should be consumed.
Two hands full.
So this is actually our measurement of the food that should be consumed. Nothing more than that. Right? So of course those who have big hands really benefit. So that should be the. Sorry?
If they are big eggs, they must be having big body also.
Yeah, also correct. So basically, we judge from our consumption what our body can take by the two hands full. And this is what he says in Yati Panchakam, that one should go about begging for food and receive that amount of food that can be put into the palms of two hands. Right? So, and also our Shastras do say that one should divide the stomach into four portions. Not physically divide, but mentally divide. Mentally divide how? Two quarters of our stomach we should consume solid food. So that is half the stomach, or two quarters you consume solid food. One quarter you should keep for liquids like juices, milk, water, etc. And one quarter of the stomach should be kept empty. Why? So there is air. There is air. When we eat and fill up the stomach right to the maximum, why do we get indigestion? Because there is no space for air. Therefore, there is fire in the stomach. But fire needs air to, combust the food, right? So if there is no space for air, the food does not get digested. So one quarter.
You don't want to waste. You keep taking
everything. Yes, especially when we go for buffet. Want to eat as much as we can. Eat all you can for 20 ringgit. So you eat like mad.
People fill, and then they can't finish.
Especially in temples, you see, very sorry to say that, then you see so much of food thrown away. So it's very sad, because then let somebody eat. So fill up the stomach and leave one quarter empty so that digestion can take place.
How do you know one quarter?
You still can eat, but stop.
Yeah, if you still feel hungry, stop. So don't eat until you don't feel hungry. If you feel a little bit hungry, stop. Yeah, a little bit hungry.
But if you only feel full, 20 minutes after the meal.
20 minutes after the meal, which is too late already.
Something I was telling you about the bowl. The bowl should be enough for one person.
Right.
The meal enough. I lived in Bangkok for a few years. Then the monks go up early morning with bowls and mats. And they, you know why? They feed a number of children in the monastery. It's not for them.
It's for the children there.
A lot of orphans.
In the monastery. So one is for those who eat excessively, yoga, meditation, they will not succeed in meditation, because definitely if you fill up your stomach and sit for meditation, you are going to feel very drowsy. And at the same time, second line verse 16, Nachai Kantam Anasnata. Also one should not eat too little or observe excessive fast also. So you have to depend, on the needs of your body. Keep moderation. If you want to fast also, it is good to fast, but don't do it in excess until you weaken the body also. And the same thing again, any extreme, so any excess on one side and excess on the other side needs to be avoided. Lead a life of moderation also. Otherwise, if you starve too much and sit in meditation, you will be only meditating on food. It will be called food meditation. So that is one discipline on food. Neither excessive overeating nor excessive fasting also. Then what else? Nachati swapana silasya. Swapana means one who sleeps too much. Excessive sleeping. So again, one should regulate the sleeping hours. Excessive sleeping means you get up late, then you don't have time for meditation. Right? So one also should not excessively sleep, and at the same time, jagrato naiva na eva, one who is also awake too long, one who sleeps very late in the night, those so-called vampires, right, who roam in the night, in the nightclubs, and come back at 2, 3, 4 o'clock and go to sleep, definitely how are they going to wake up early for meditation? So basically what he's saying, yoga or meditation is not possible for one who leads an indisciplined life. So regulation in food, regulation in sleeping, and now he will also talk about other things to be regulated.
But what about those on shift duty? They are also very regulated.
Correct.
They sleep late in the night and yes. happening.
Correct. But you see, that's why the timing, the hours, if they have to work in the night is okay, they sleep in the daytime, but then they have that extra hours to do meditation. So if, even if they have to sleep in the morning is okay, but they adjust their time for meditation. Basically, it is nothing in excess. Whatever you do has to be in moderation. So now here in verse number 17, Krishna speaks about three more things to regulate, that is ahara, vihara and chestasya karmashu, three things. Ahara means what we intake. That is, you can see the word yukta ahara viharasya in the first line. So just look at the word ahara. Ahara means what we intake. Now when we say intake, it is not necessarily what we intake through the mouth. Here the word ahara means everything we intake through our five senses. So the discipline in life must be there, that we must be very careful also as we are awake and moving around, where we expose our five senses. Our ears are intaking gossip, our eyes are seeing the wrong things and so forth and so forth. So ahara is disciplining our all our five senses. What we intake through the mouth, through the eyes, through the ears, etc. That is ahara. That's why it's called what is gathered. And vihara is moderation in rest and recreation, because that also is needed. And especially this is advice for those who are workaholics, constantly working, 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 and no time even for rest and relaxation. So there should be some time also kept aside for us to rest and relax also. Observe moderation. And then he says, yukta chestasya karmashu. Also in our working life also we have to have moderation. So again, it comes back to those workaholics who do not know how to adjust their time between working and relaxation also. Either spend too much time relaxing or spend too much time working. Again, moderation. So chesta here means what effort we put in our life. So as we have explained before, that one should lead a balanced life. You have to give time for your duties, for your work. At the same time, you have to give time for your spiritual growth also. And again, Krishna mentions yukta swapana. Swapana means covers both sleeping and dreaming, both daydreaming and night dreaming also. So one who wastes a lot of time in all types of dream type of states, sleeping and waking and dreaming. And Krishna says, if we are able to discipline all this, our eating, sleeping, working, relaxation, all this, what will be the end result? Yoga, dukkha. Now look at the word dukkha. You see dukkha, ha. Okay, there's an extra ha there, okay? Now what does it mean? Yoga, dukkha, ha, bhavati. This yoga, this disciplined life, bhavati means it becomes. Dukkha means sorrow. Ha means destroyer. The word ha comes from the Sanskrit word hanti, which means to destroy. So dukkha ha means this disciplined life is the destroyer of sorrow. Because all our agitation, irritation comes from leading a indisciplined life. Eventually it catches up with us. So the very cause of our sorrow will be destroyed when we lead a life of moderation. We will have enough time for our work and enough time for our spiritual growth also. So this disciplined life becomes a source of peace for us, a life of moderation. Initially it is going to be difficult, just like when we are overweight and we want to start exercise, it is going to be difficult. But if we are able to be disciplined and lead a life of exercise, you would find that that becomes a cause of your happiness. Eventually your health improves also. So similarly, disciplined life in eating, sleeping, working and recreation. So now up to this verse 17, Krishna has dealt extensively with the general disciplines to be observed in our daily life and specific disciplines to be observed prior to sitting in meditation. Now there are only two more topics that Krishna has to cover. One is called Dhyana Swarupam. What happens when we sit for meditation? How do you define the state of meditation? Which is going to tell us in verses 18 and 19. And then he will tell us Dhyana Phalam. What is the fruit or the benefits of meditation? And for this we must go back to Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, which I've written on the board here, because Krishna's discipline or meditation follows Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. And Patanjali's Yoga Sutras is written by Sage Patanjali, which explains to us how to moderate our life and then how to meditate. It is called Ashtanga Yoga. I've written the word there, Ashtanga. Ashtanga means, Anga means limbs or steps. Ashta means eight. So there are eight steps how we should slowly progress to meditation. You can notice that the actual meditative state is only here. Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana. So this is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Only these three stages refer to the actual meditative state. But prior to that, these four, Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, refer to the preparatory stages to meditation. Then only you come to meditation, and finally this is the fruit of meditation called Samadhi, the eighth step. So how he has divided it, as I've said that we will talk about Yama, Niyama. Yama is the five don'ts, what we should not do. Niyama is the five do's, what we should do in our life. And this comes under Bahir Anga Sadhana, which Krishna has discussed, general disciplines to be observed in our daily life. Then Asana is the seat of meditation, and Pranayama is the control of breath, which comes at the time of Antar Anga Sadhana, how we should prepare ourselves before we enter into state of meditation. So where we sit, we have discussed all this, on what you should sit, where you should sit. Pranayama, you should first regulate your breathing in order to bring your mind under control. Then we come to Pratyahara, which is to withdraw your senses. Pratyahara deals with the senses. Dharana deals with focusing the mind. And Dhyana means fixing the mind. So this is what is called Dhyana Swarupa, the actual state of meditation. When we are able to withdraw our senses, you remember he said that, how do you withdraw your senses? You lower the tip of your eyes, don't close it, don't keep it fully open, so it is half closed, and therefore your eyes can only look at one direction. Now if you really try this now, you see, if you open your eyes, you will notice you can flick your eyes to left and right without moving your head. But if you try and close your eyelids halfway or three-quarter way, you will find you cannot move your eyeballs. You are unable to move your eyeballs. You go back and try this, don't try it now. So that is called Pratyahara. Dharana is after you have focused your eyes on a specific object. Dharana is now you have to deal with your mind. So your mind will keep on running, you keep on bringing it back. Running, you keep bringing it back. So dharana is a practice of observing your mind and pulling it back. Running away, pulling it back. It is like when you take a camera and you want to focus on something to photograph, you will try to adjust the camera, see the lighting angle and all that kind of thing. So you are trying to focus your camera on an object. That is called dharana. And when you have actually fixed or focused on the object, that is called jnana, when you are able to totally fix your mind on something, then it does not wander. So all this requires practice. And that is called dhyana swarupa, the actual state of sitting for meditation, disciplining senses and the mind. And if you are able to do this continuously, you reach this stage of dhyana where your mind is continuously fixed on something, then comes the state of samadhi. Samadhi means not that you have died. That is not samadhi. That state of samadhi when you are talking about total state of bliss. So now let us look at what is yama and niyama. What are the five do's and don'ts that we should observe in life? And one more thing is, Patanjali's Yoga Sutras has got two parts. One is called a practice of meditation, which is Yoga Abhyasa. It is a practice of meditation, which is what Krishna is speaking about. It follows this Patanjali Yoga Sutras. The second part of Patanjali's Yoga Sutras is called a philosophy part, which is called Yoga Darshanam. Now, the philosophy of Patanjali is to reach a state of mind which is thoughtlessness. That means your mind thinks of nothing at all. But Vedantic meditation does not agree with this. Vedantic meditation says if you reach a state of thoughtlessness, you will enjoy some bliss, but that is not samadhi. So Vedantic meditation is what? Not a state of thoughtlessness, but your mind is constantly repeating the teachings that you have learnt. What are the teachings? Aham Atma Asmi. I am the eternal soul. Aham Nitya. I am eternal. Aham Sakshi. I am the witness. So Vedantic meditation comes after the knowledge. After you attain knowledge of what is Atman and you accept that I am the soul, the meditation, which is called Nididhyasanam, is to reflect on the words of the scriptures. Vedantic meditation is not thoughtlessness, it is constantly recalling the words of the scriptures, which is what? I am the eternal soul. And this is to be repeated constantly in your mind. So that is called Vedantic meditation. Okay, so now, what is Yama? What are the five things that we should, the five don'ts, the five yamas means the five don'ts. And the first one is called ahimsa. Ahimsa means non-violence. And when we say non-violence, it does not just cover physical non-violence. It means at a mental state, one should not have violent thoughts also. At the verbal level, one should not use violent or foul language also. So the discipline in our daily life is ahimsa, meaning avoidance of physical violence, verbal violence and mental violence. All three. That is ahimsa. Then the second don't is satyam. Satyam means do not speak lies. Speak the truth. So give up speaking untruth. That is called satyam. Don't lead a life of falsehood. Right? As much as you can, lead a truthful life, satyam. Again, it is at mental level and verbal level also. The third is asteyam. Asteyam is honesty, non-stealing. Never possess anything that does not legitimately belong to you. Asteyam is A-S-T-E-Y-A-M. Asteyam. A-S-T-E-Y-A-M. So, don't possess anything that does not legitimately belong to you. Don't acquire anything by unfair means. The fourth quality is brahmacharya. Brahmacharya here means giving up inappropriate attitude towards the opposite sex. So give up inappropriate relationships with the opposite sex. That is brahmacharya. So again, the discipline that has to be brought into our lives. And the fifth one is called aparigraha. A-P-A-R-I-G-R-A-H-A. aparigraha comes from the root word parigraha. Parigraha means possessions. So aparigraha means one should limit your possessions. Right? Should lead a life of moderation in things that you possess also. Aparigraha means minimize your possessions. Why? Because again, the more possessions you have, there is more attachment, and at the time of meditation, your mind will run towards your possessions. So minimizing the possession, as they say, leading a simple life. Right? What they say? Simple living, high thinking. Okay? That is the five don'ts. Now we come to Niyama, the five do's, what you are to implement in your life. So the first one is called Saucham. Saucham, S-H-A-U-C-H-A-M, Saucham. Saucham means purity. Now, when we talk about Saucham purity, it means keep your environment clean. Your house, your office, etc., keep your environment clean. Saucham also means keep your clothes also clean. What you wear, keep that cleanliness in your clothes also. And then Saucham comes to the internal level where you keep your body, your mind also clean. Have healthy thoughts, have clean thoughts. So Saucham covers external plus internal cleanliness. Mind clean, words clean, body clean, clothes are clean, environment is clean. All that is discipline also to be observed. Second is Santosha, S-A-N-T-O-S-H-A, Santosha. Santosha means contentment. Learn to be content with everything that you have. And the biggest reason why we are never content, what is the reason why we are never content?
Desire.
Always comparing yourself.
The habit of comparison. Compare with your neighbor, compare with your relatives, compare with your friends, compare with society, what they have, why I don't have. So stop this comparison. Comparison only leads to two things. Either you are envious or you get
proud,
arrogant. Why? Because when you compare, if somebody has less than you, you get arrogant and proud. If somebody has more than you, you get jealous, you get envious. So comparison does not give you any form of peace of mind. So Santosha means never compare, don't compare, don't keep on hankering and lamenting what we have, why others have this, why I don't have this. And this joy of comparing takes away our habit of comparing takes away our total joy. Why?
When you're comparing, you're not enjoying what you have.
Neither are you happy in the present,
and
neither are you happy about the future, because you don't have that. So even about the future, you're not happy. Neither are you happy in the present. So at all times, you're not happy. Now also, I'm not happy because I don't have this. And when, I don't know when I will get that, so my happiness also is postponed. So there is what we call Santosha. Learn to be thankful for what you have. We will never enjoy the present and we only worry about the future. The next is to be observed, very important, which Adi Shankaracharya also keeps on repeating in many of his texts, is called Svadhyaya. S-V-A-D-H-Y-A-Y-A, which is scriptural study or study of the scriptures. It's a compulsory duty that all of us have to imbibe in. So Svadhyaya means daily reading of the scriptures. The next quality is called Tapaha, austerity, T-A-P-A-H, Tapaha. Simple living, observing moderation in life, Tapaha. And the best way, of course, to practice Tapaha is how? Austerity. What is the best way to practice austerity?
Fast.
One is fast. But actually, what you're doing when you're fasting?
You're disciplining yourself, controlling your mind.
Take anything that you are attach to and deny yourself that very thing for one day. If you are addicted to 8 cups of coffee, then choose that one day where you don't drink coffee. That helps you to inculcate austerity, that kind of discipline in you. So whatever you are addicted to, if you like, some people I see put excessive salt in their food, they like to sprinkle a lot of salt, so, or sugar. So for that, once a week, take that one day and deny yourself whatever you are addicted to. And that will help you to also discipline your mind, right? And at that time, when on that day that you deny yourself, then what you should think of, supposing like coffee comes in your mind, what should you think of? Thank the Lord. Think of God. So when we fast also, you see the word fasting, the word is called upavasa, right? We call fasting upavasa, right? And people say upavas is fasting. But upavas does not mean fasting. Because it has two words. Upa means near. Vas means?
Living.
Living near. So when you are fasting, you are living near the kitchen or living near the dining table. Is that fasting?
No, living near the Lord.
Living near the Lord. Your mind must be constantly having thoughts of the Lord. That is called upavasa. So fasting is not living near food, but living near God also. Otherwise they say body is fasting, mind is feasting.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
That is a common
rule. Our people, when they're fasting during the Navratri, they're thinking what sort of food
will eat. Yeah, exactly.
So in the kitchen, because today they're fasting, so that particular type of food
you want, yeah.
So instead of being near the Lord, we are in the kitchen.
That's why the word upavasa is wrongly translated as fasting, when it means it's actually being near. So tapaha, austerity, and the last one is called Ishvara Pranidhaya. Ishvara is God. Pranidhaya is P-R-A-N-I-D-H-A-Y-A. Pranidhaya means having this attitude of total surrender to God. And what do we mean by total surrender? Yes?
What was the word? Ishvara?
Ishvara Pranidhaya. P-R-A-N-I-D-H-A-Y-A. Now, that means surrender to the Lord. So what do we mean when we say, I surrender to the Lord? What does it mean? We use this word very often. I have surrendered to the Lord. What do you mean by that actually? Whatever we do, whatever we receive is Ishvara Prasadam. I surrender to the law of karma. This law of karma, which is designed by God to maintain the universal harmony. Every action has a equal reaction. I surrender to that. So every experience that I go through, joy or sorrow, everything is happening according to the law of karma. So therefore, we should learn not to resist any experience, because resistance gives us agitation in the mind. The more we resist, the more agitation in the mind, and we don't criticize the Lord for whatever happens to us also. Because whatever is happening is due to our very actions, which are coming back to us again. So you can try to improve the future, as the future has not come, but what has already come is the law of karma. Right? So that we should understand. Do not allow the experience to create any bitterness, anger or hatred in the mind. And that is also known as saranagati or total surrender. Acceptance of the law of karma. So following this yama and niyama will help to make us a moral, ethical, cultured person. And therefore yama and niyama fall under bahiranga sadhana, the general disciplines that we must follow in our daily life in order to cultivate a moral and ethical lifestyle, which will also help us at the time of meditation. And then we come to the third stage, which I explained to you, is asana, that is training ourselves to sit in a particular posture, in a particular place for a length of time. Then comes pranayama, which deals with regulating the breathing, as because the breathing is related to the state of the mind. So concentrate and regulate your breathing. Then we come to Pratyahara, the fifth step, which is learning to withdraw the senses. The wandering senses are mastered by concentrating on a particular object. And then finally comes the what we call the dharana and dhyana. Dharana is attempting to focus the mind as it goes wandering, pulling it back. And finally, if you keep on practicing this, you know, the mind is said to be like an animal, which for years, if you let an animal loose in the jungle, and one day you go and catch this animal, and you put that animal in a cage, what's going to happen? The animal is going to be very agitated. But if you keep that animal caged for a number of years, what happens? Finally, the animal gets subdued. That is the nature of our mind. For 40, 50 years, we've allowed it to wander in the jungle. Now, one day we just sit down and try to meditate, it's not going to happen. So, you've got to go through two stages. Dharana, observe the mind as it runs, pull it back, observe, pull it back, that is dharana. If you're able to do it frequently, you will find that you're able to discipline that mind. So, that's why Vedantic meditation is not thoughtlessness. It is constantly repeating the Vedic mantras in your mind. And that will help you to focus and bring your mind back. Until there is dhyana, which is total fixing the mind. And then we reach samadhi. Okay, so that is the eight stages that is according to Patanjali Yoga Sutras. And where will this culminate in? It will culminate in samadhi. As I said, samadhi is that total state of bliss. Now we come to this verses 18 and 19.
Patanjali Yoga Sutras, what period? When did Patanjali come into the picture?
Even before, because Krishna here is referring
to... Yeah, Krishna is
referring. Yeah, Krishna also is referring to Patanjali. Means Patanjali has come even before. Much before that year. So this state of when we sit for meditation is when we keep on recalling the words of the scriptures is similar to what we do when we do this Akhanda Nama Bhajan. Right, when you take the name of the Lord and you sit down and you keep on reciting, right? Sometimes we gather in groups and then you take one name of the Lord and you keep on reciting. So you sit there for 30 minutes or 1 hour or 2 hours and it goes on mass repetition of the name of the Lord. Akhanda means continuous. Nama Bhajan. Now what happens when you sit down like that 2-3 hours and then you go back? That same mantra is ringing in your head, right? Automatically, without you having to think about it, it rings in your head. So this is exactly the state of dhyanam, dharana and dhyanam. As you keep on recalling the mantras, constantly, automatically, you will find that when you sit in meditation, automatically the mantra will come to your mind. So it will help you to focus your mind. And that's when you don't have to use any self-effort, because it is in your subconscious mind, you find the mantra keeps on, what we call repeating in your mind. Okay. So now, here Krishna is describing verses 18 and 19. The actual state of meditation, what is the state of that meditator? So verse number 18 says, Yada, when viniyatam chittam. Chittam now here refers to that mind of the meditator, which is viniyatam means fully under his control. The mind which is not withdrawing, which is not running away, which has totally been withdrawn from the external world. So there is no thoughts connected with anything external. The mind has been totally withdrawn. And sarve kamevya. Sarve kamevya. You look at the third line. Sarve means all. Kamevya means desirable objects. Whatever possessions, whatever relations we have, the mind has been totally withdrawn. How? Through the practice of this Ashtanga Yoga. Through constantly pulling your mind back and recalling the words of the scriptures, you will find that you are able to fix your mind permanently on something, and that and you are able to withdraw from all types of kamevya, means desirable objects, and also nishpraha. Not only you are able to withdraw your mind from external objects, but nishpraha means there is no more hankering. Spraha means to think about the future. So there is no more hankering. I want this, I want that, should I have this, should I have that. That also the mind has been totally withdrawn. Now this withdrawing of the mind is very important to note. It is not a forced withdrawal. If we try to force ourselves not to think of external, it is not going to be possible. So how does this yogi being able to withdraw his mind from the external? From thoughts of objects, from thoughts of desirable objects, from thoughts about future possessions. How is the yogi able to withdraw? It's not by force. If it's by force, the mind will keep running back. So how are you able to withdraw? What helps you to withdraw the mind? How? What tools do you use to help you to withdraw? That's one thing, but your mind still will run. Now, your mind will run for something that you have value for, that you think brings happiness to you, that you think brings peace of mind to you. But to a yogi who has gone through the scriptures, who understands what is the nature of the world. Remember chapter 9? Krishna described what is the nature of the world. Anityam, asukham, lokam. The loka, the world, has got two qualities. Anityam, which means what? It is unreal, it keeps changing all the time. And because the world of objects and people keeps on changing, it is also asukham. It brings about sorrow. Therefore, if I know that the more I pursue the world, and the nature of the world is it is unstable, it is changing, I will never be able to find happiness. By that knowledge, I am able to withdraw. I find there is no more value in pursuing objects. So it is an intelligent withdrawal. It is not a forceful withdrawal. I understand the nature of the world. I engage with the world to do my duty. I do my duty. I take care of my responsibility. But I don't depend on the world for my happiness. Dependence, another name for dependence is what? What is another name for dependence? Attachment. Attachment means dependence. Dependence means what? I am dependent on this person for my happiness. I am dependent on this object for my happiness. But when I understand that every object is subject to change, every person is subject to change, I should not depend my happiness, my security, my peace of mind on the world. So it is an intelligent withdrawal, not a forceful withdrawal.
What is the mind?
Sorry?
What is the mind?
The mind must accept. That's why the first thing is to strengthen the intellect. Once we strengthen the intellect, the mind will follow the intellect. When the intellect is weak, the mind will follow the senses.
But intellect must have a very conducive environment.
Conducive environment is there, but even if you have a conducive environment, the mind can still run to 101 objects. So we have to learn to discipline the mind, right? The conducive environment, we can have everything at our disposal, yet our mind still runs for something. But when I understand that whatever I'm pursuing is not going to give me more happiness, but on the contrary can be the cause of my sorrow, then I will not spend waste my time pursuing any more objects of the world. I will look for my happiness elsewhere. Searching for happiness is our human rights. Our only problem is we are searching in the wrong direction. So we have the right to search for happiness, but search in the right direction. So therefore Krishna says, this meditator, his mind, Atman eva avatishtate. Avatishtate means rest or dwell in Atman. Now, what does it mean when the mind is dwelling in Atman? Because Atman is everywhere. Atman is all pervading. it does not mean that the mind is here, the Atman is somewhere else, so the mind is going to travel somewhere to go and dwell in Atman. So what it means that the mind is, what does it mean here? What does it mean when the mind is dwelling in Atman? Is it that the Atman is somewhere else and then your mind is somewhere that you have to constantly go and fix your mind on Atman?
No, but within you.
So what does it mean, the mind dwelling in Atman? The mind should constantly, the mind should constantly fix the thoughts on Atman. Dwelling the mind on Atman means constantly bringing in thoughts about Atma. What is Atma? Again, you have to recall the words of the scriptures. If you remember chapter 2 verses 12 to 25, Krishna gave us all the qualities of the Atma. It is Nitya, it is Sarvagata, it is Sakshi, it is eternal, it is all pervading. All that is helping our mind to dwell constantly on Atman, entertain thoughts of Atma by recalling the words of the scriptures. That's why I keep saying that Vedantic meditation is not thoughtlessness. It is thinking of the words of the scriptures. So otherwise, if you reach a state of thoughtlessness, you will get extreme happiness, you will get extreme relaxation, and other people also will get relaxation while you are meditating also. So that's all you will accomplish. And why we say that it's not a state of thoughtlessness, if you think about it, when there is a thought, who are you? You are actually witnessing the thought, isn't it? So now, are you the thought or the witness?
Witness.
When there is a state of thoughtlessness, who are you? How do you know you are in a state of thoughtlessness? You are still the witness. Correct? How do you know that you are in a state of thoughtlessness? There has got to be a witness who knows that I am not thinking of anything, isn't it? So whatever it is, if you are in a state of thoughts, there is a witness. Even if you are in a state of thoughtlessness, there is also a witness. Like for example, when you go to sleep, is your mind working? I asked the same question in one class. One half said yes, one half said no, one half said maybe. So all three, they covered themselves. When you are in a state of deep sleep, is your mind working?
Yes. See, I don't know when I'm in deep sleep, but mind is working, because that's why sometimes subconsciously we dream of different things.
No, I'm talking about dreaming. There are three stages. One is called Jagrat, is awake. One is Swapana, that is dream. I'm talking about Sushupti, which is deep sleep. So I'm talking about deep sleep.
It's still that activity. It can never stop. There will be subdued activity still.
Hmm. Your mind in deep sleep is not working. If your mind is working, you will never be able to go to sleep. See, at the waking stage, your mind, your senses, everything is functioning. In the dream state, your senses are not functioning, your mind is functioning. In the deep sleep state, your mind, your intellect, everything is not functioning. That's why you're able to have a restful sleep.
But don't they say you can measure your brain activity?
Correct. But the brain activity is very restful already. Okay. Now, when you wake up, how do you know you're dreaming? How do you know you're sleeping? How do you know that you were sleeping? How do you know that you had a peaceful sleep?
We feel fresh. When you have a peaceful sleep, you feel fresh.
Right. How do you know that you were sleeping? If your mind was working, you would not be able to go to sleep. That means what was only functioning at the time of deep sleep is your consciousness. Atman is the only thing that is functioning during your deep sleep. Even your mind is not functioning.
So that activity which they...
It is an observer. It's an observer. So when you come out of your sleep, when you are at the awake state, you know that you had a refreshing sleep.
See, I like to ask you something. You see, many times when you go for meditation and all, they will say, just put yourself, there's no thoughtful, your mind
no thoughts.
No thoughts. How to have, when I'm aware of it, I shouldn't have thought. That the very thought that I should be thoughtlessness is troubling you.
You see, when you say you should be aware that you have no thoughts, it's better to be aware that I'm conscious I have no thoughts. I am the consciousness that is observing my mind. Whether the mind is having thoughts, I am the consciousness observing. If my mind is in a state of thoughtlessness, who am I? I am the consciousness that is observing my state of thoughtlessness.
I would say that is part of focusing. You're following your mind. You are trying to control your mind. Your mind is wandering, but you're still focusing on the mind.
But you must tell yourself, I am not the mind.
Yeah.
I am the observer of the mind. If you are the mind, that means it is subject to change again. Whereas Atman is not subject to change. So, whether you are in a state of thoughts or thoughtlessness, always understand that you are the experiencer behind the thoughts. You are the experiencer that knows. Okay, how do you know you are happy? There has got to be an experiencer that knows I am happy. Right?
I am the one my conscious or whatever.
So, that is the consciousness. I know yesterday I was not happy. I know today I am happy. That means that consciousness does not change. It was there yesterday, it is there today. But what has changed? The state of happiness to unhappiness, that has changed. But who are we? We are the changeless consciousness. We are the observer. So at that stage here, that's why this, where was I, what was I talking about? I ran off somewhere. Yeah, in deep sleep. So that I am the experiencer. Even in time of meditation, you are always the experiencer. You are observing your mind running, you are able to pull your mind back. If you say you are the mind, you run away with the mind, wherever the mind goes. So you have to understand this.
So there is object and subject.
Object and subject, exactly. There is an object and there is a subject. So just like, example, we take this hall. Our mind is like this hall, right? Thoughts are like the people who come and go. Okay? So what is the consciousness? Our mind is like this hall. Thoughts are people who come and go into this hall. What is the consciousness? The light. The light is the consciousness. Your mind is the hall. Thoughts are those who are people who are coming in and out. Consciousness is the light that is just observing everything. It is not affected at all. Whoever comes in the hall, whoever leaves the hall, light is just observing. That is the consciousness. So we have to understand that we are the consciousness that is observing the mind, the thoughts which are coming and going.
So you are saying that we should not let our thoughts affect our actions.
Actions are always affected by your thoughts.
That's why we talk about yama and niyama. At the state of that daily discipline, if our environment does not affect our mind, then at the state of meditation, again the external will not affect our mind. So that discipline first has to be observed before we come and sit for meditation. And then understand at that state of meditation that we are the observer. Just like the light in the hall is the observer. Okay, so here Krishna says, yukta iti uchyate, that is what is called being totally absorbed in the state of meditation. When your mind is neither hankering for the future, neither is your mind thinking about all your possessions, your objects and your relatives, etc. That is what is called a true state of meditation. Right? And what is the mind recalling? The mind is fixed in the Atman, which means it is recalling the words of the scriptures as to what is the nature of Atman. So, it is not thoughtlessness meditation. And in this next verse 19, Krishna will give us an allegory to explain the state of that meditator's mind. So, what is that allegory? He says, supposing there is a lighted lamp. There is a lighted lamp with a flame. And this flame is kept in an open place. And once the flame is kept in an open place, the flame will flicker according to the flow of the wind. Whichever direction the wind is blowing, the flame will flicker. So the lamp is totally unprotected. Now in meditation also our thoughts are like that, like the flame. Whichever direction the thoughts come, that's where the mind keeps on going. When we entertain this thought, the mind will run towards that. So you are not able to retain a particular thought, you keep on drifting away. So how to protect this mind now? What is the protection? As the mind is constantly flickering like a flame, so what is the protection? Just like the lamp is protected from the flame by putting a glass covering, what is it that would protect our mind from flickering here and there? Think of the Lord. So basically Vedantic meditation, we come back again to recalling the words of the scriptures. That is what helps us to protect the mind from running here and there. As the mind is running, we are constantly recalling that mantra or the words of the scriptures. That becomes a protective nature for the mind. So,
but sometimes while you're even reciting the mantra, the mind is somewhere
still running. Yeah. So we must observe the mind. See, that's very important. We observe the mind. We must not go in the direction of the mind. Understand, you're always the observer, never the mind. You're not the mind, you're not the intellect, you are the observer.
You know, sometimes the mantra is already ingrained subconsciously, you can recite.
That's why they say it is also good to keep changing the mantras. Don't fix on one mantra, because once you fix on one mantra, you find that you're automatically repeating it and your mind is somewhere else.
You're supposed to do that to your guru mantra anyway.
No, guru mantra is one thing. But even in meditation, when you sit, you find that if you stick to the same mantra, after a while it becomes mechanical.
Yeah.
So choose different mantras, keep on changing. Then you come back.
In aartis also, when we keep doing the same aarti.
Yes, exactly.
The same thing happens, we are doing that aarti, but your
mind is somewhere else.
It's not with the Lord.
Exactly.
That should be.
Exactly.
So should we change the aarti also?
No. Because you can't change the aarti. But two very important exercise that Krishna will give us later in verse 35, which is called Vairagya and Abhyasa. These two things will help us to control the mind. Later, Arjuna will ask the question and Krishna will answer with these two helpful, Vairagya and Abhyasa. Okay, so we will stop here and we'll come back next week. Next week is a public holiday. But we are carrying on with with the class. And so as usual, next Thursday we will be back here for the class.
So we finished verse 18.
Yes, 18, but not 19. There's still some more. We're going into 19. Huh? We end with the prayer. Vasudeva sutam devam kansa chanura maradhanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagat